So listen to this statement before I start this episode of Cut the Clutter. And this is something like, no matter how many eyes you have, be careful not to be poked. And if you harm our sovereign security or development interests, those eyes will be plucked out. Doesn't matter whether you have 5 eyes or 10 eyes. So who's saying that and to whom? Now, I know that all of you are too smart not to have guessed the answer to those two questions. So then you know what we are talking about. We are talking about, why is China so angry? And why is it so angry? It looks like with a lot of countries. We think they are angry with us, us Indians, because they are piling up all these forces. Looks like for a long stay in the Himalayas and Ladakh. But it looks like now that they are happy with any country which is not, if I may use a less polite expression, which is not sucking up to them or which is not a client state. So this was a statement issued specifically directed at what is called as the Five Eyes Alliance. We spoke about what Five Eyes Alliance is in our episode 567, of which I'll be sharing a link with you today so you can go back to it. Now, Five Eyes Alliance is one of those early Cold War institutions which have survived and prospered. Unlike NATO, under Trump had suffered, but as Trump became more and more hostile to China specifically, Five Eyes actually got strengthened. So Five Eyes Alliance, once to revise what we discussed in 567, America, Canada, Britain, Australia and New Zealand. They have this security and intelligence alliance whereby they share all their intelligence information as if it all comes from the same source and is meant for the same user. So this is a very strong strategic alliance, and remember, two of these countries are in this part of the world. They are Australasian countries, that is Australia and New Zealand, and that irritates the Chinese a great deal. Now, Five Eyes Alliance issued a statement protesting the Chinese eviction of pro-democracy parliamentarians in Hong Kong, and they asked for them to be reinstated. It was in response to that the official Chinese spokesman Zhao Lijian, who we quote often, he got angry and he made this statement. Now, this is not the kind of statement that you find in today's diplomacy any country using about any other country. In fact, even India and Pakistan, at least at the official level, don't use statements like these about each other. I mean, behind their backs, they might send compliments to members of each other's family, sort of in Punjabi style, but not on the surface. There are some basic diplomatic decencies maintained, but not in this case. So this was a furious reaction. You don't agree with me. You ask me to do something that I don't like, I will gouge your eyes out. Then, of course, the Chinese spokesman goes on to say that those who love China and those who love Hong Kong should govern Hong Kong. All the rest should be evicted or thrown out. So that is the Chinese equivalent of go to Pakistan. Bhej do inko Pakistan. Anti-national hai. Bit like that. Nevertheless, let's stay in the context of what we are talking about. Now, if you thought this was one stray outburst, that is not so. If you also thought this was just wolf warrior diplomacy on China's part that we've talked about in the past, no, it is not just so. Because with that, the Chinese did something substantive. They essentially delivered an ultimatum to Australia, a big country in this neighborhood, in our neighborhood, member of the Five Eyes Alliance. They issued almost like an ultimatum, and they did not even serve it officially, discreetly to the government of Australia. They actually served it on three major media organizations in Australia. That is 9 News, Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, two big newspapers, and one TV channel. And this ultimatum actually listed 14 grievances that the Chinese have with the current Australian government. Now, what these grievances are, because it was deliberately leaked by the Chinese, it was as brazen as that. What these grievances are, you will see see these run slowly on our screen, and we'll give you a link also so you can read these. But these are quite incredible in the sense that one sovereign country is telling the other sovereign country to comply with so many of its wishes and demands. I don't think in medieval times you put conditions like this, or maybe in medieval times you put conditions like this before invading another country, saying either you become my vassal or I will invade you, and you send me a tribute, so many elephants, so many horses, send me two princesses from your palace, etc., etc., to marry. So this is an ultimatum in those terms. So I will quickly run through some of the key points here. First, this ultimatum says that your government is trying to block our investment projects. Now, the Chinese are very irritated because a lot of their big investment projects have got held up in Australia. Australia is a very large country. It's a continent with a very small population. It has lots of empty spaces, and it can be filled out very soon by countries with larger populations if they are allowed to set up large economic projects there. So far, the Chinese, who have spare money and who have the need for projects outside, they've been dominating the Australian market. Now there's a pushback for Australia, and I know that the moment you mention the word Adani, there will be a collective nod again on the part of many of our fans in the country. But the fact is that Adani coal mining project, one reason the Australian governments, even the previous Labour government, which was much more favorably inclined towards China, all governments have supported the Adani project, and Government of India is also partnering in supporting the Adani project, is a strategic one, which is that let another country, a friendly country like India, also have a large investment project in Australia, not just China. China, in fact, wanted to develop a farm project there, which was almost larger than the area of many European countries, because Australia is a large empty country. So many of these projects have been stopped. The Chinese are saying the first grievance is that stop blocking our investment projects. 10 big investment projects you have blocked by just employing some opaque security concerns. Number two, very direct. If there's one thing you can say for the Chinese, they are not subtle, very direct. No idhar se, udhar se, no baato baato mein baat, straightforward. So they say, you have banned Huawei from participating in your 5G implementation under US pressure. So reverse this. Number three, you have passed a foreign interference legislation in your parliament, saying that you will resist foreign powers interfering in your internal affairs. That is directed at China. So they are also telling what they should tell their parliament to do and what they should not tell their parliament to do. They also complain about Australian media. So it's also as if a democracy like Australia now has to tell its media to shut up and be kind to China, because China is telling them to. So it's Chinese to presume that democracies can control their media as much as they can control their own is a bit rich. But when you think you are a very big power and you have oversized muscles, you can flex them. The presumption you make is somebody will get scared, but somebody may not. If somebody does not get scared, then problems arise. Or maybe a lot of other people get scared who you did not intend to scare at that point, and we'll come to that. Next point, they say you are revoking visas for our scholars. You are causing politicization and stigmatization of our normal exchanges. Now, many of these scholars, the Australians have found, or they suspect, they are not just scholars, they are more than scholars. And let me not go into who they might be. So they have now clamped down on visas for scholars coming in, or scholars coming in from China. So they say you are unnecessarily stigmatizing our normal exchanges, so restore it. Essentially, the Chinese want restoration of the labor times in Australia. So to that extent, they are also playing into the internal politics of Australia, because labor was much friendlier to China. The labor view of China is something that in India we'd call appeasement. It was a policy of appeasement. That is what Morrison's government is now reversed. Then they say, you made a call for an independent inquiry into COVID-19. This is under political manipulation by the US. You should not have done it. So just the crime, quote unquote crime, of demanding an inquiry into how COVID-19 spread from China is seen as an act of provocation and actually almost like an act of war. And they say that under US manipulation, you are creating this kind of nuisance for us. Then they go on to say, next point, that you are making noise about and interfering in the in our internal affairs in Xinjiang with the Uyghur problem, Hong Kong and Taiwan affairs. And you are protesting about these in multilateral forums. So cease and desist. Janta nahi hai mera baap kaun hai, right? Aur janta nahi hai tera baap kaun hai, main tera baap hu. So that is the kind of attitude that, you know, we are the big daddies of the region, so everybody fall in line. Next point, you are the first non-littoral state. You don't have a direct interest in South China Sea. You are far away from South China Sea, but you are issuing statements on South China Sea. What business do you have to issue statements on South China Sea? It's called South China Sea. From China ka matlab hai, tum kaun hote ho? So it's a bit like India were to say tomorrow, if India became as powerful as China, that this is Indian Ocean. Nobody in the world should talk about Indian Ocean. So South China Sea. Then they say that why are you reviewing many of our projects, including specifically the Chinese Belt and Road project in the state of Victoria? That's where the Chinese have worked very closely with Labour Party there. But this government, Morrison government, which is a federal government in Australia, that doesn't want that project, it seems. So the Chinese are protesting. So this is again a big power, a much bigger power, using its sovereign clout to promote its business interests in a smaller country. Then it carries on. It's really like a lover's tiff, like a lover's got so angry and is now writing an angry letter listing all his or her complaints. And it says, you are funding anti-China think tanks and think tanks that are producing lies and propaganda around Xinjiang and about Chinese infiltration into Australia's affairs. Now, this is obviously a reference to some paperwork, some research work that's come out and that we have talked about, analyzing satellite data to give the world very good evidence of what the Chinese are doing to Uyghurs, their mosques, their way of life, etc., etc., in Xinjiang province. Then they say you are carrying out raids on Chinese journalists. You are seizing their devices. Now, Australians carried out these raids on Chinese journalists because they suspected that they were not just journalists, they were part of China's soft power. So they had to control them. So Chinese are protesting about that. It's the only time I've seen the Chinese protest about journalistic freedoms, such as these are. Then they say that you are making fake allegations against us of making cyber attacks on you. And then they go on to say that outrageous attacks on Chinese Communist Party by your MPs, etc., etc., etc. Now, this is really like a charge sheet. And sovereign countries don't do such stuff to each other. And even if we do, they do it softly, they do it behind closed doors, or they do it in their confidential memo exchange. But in this case, this has been made public, and this has been made public in Australia. So this has been thrown into the Australian public debate. So this is by way of saying, I am doing what I want. Now you respond because I have let out. And already pressure has started in Australia. Labour Party in Australia is now saying that so much of our trade is being affected by our deteriorating relations with China. So this government should not stand on ego, etc. It should bend over backwards. Bend over backwards, my words, not Labour statement. It should now go back and mend its relationship with China and not be hostile to China. So Chinese, look, all democratic countries have this problem, that a dictatorial country has the ability to go and twist or to play with its internal democratic political processes. That's what China is doing right now in Australia. Now, Australia is doing a few things because Australia has to respond to it. So Australia and Japan have now signed a very strong security arrangement. That is again something that the Chinese have reacted very strongly to. If this agreement is now ratified by the Japanese parliament, as it will be, it should be, then it will be the first time after more than 60 years that Japanese would have agreed to base foreign troops on their soil. This is after the deal with the Americans to have their troops on Japanese soil. Now there will be Australian troops. All this is happening within the overlay of the Quad at the same time. So the Chinese see this as trouble. And once again, the same Chinese spokesman Zhao Lijian said, people in Australia with, quote, Cold War mentality and ideological prejudice, unquote, had, quote, taken a series of wrong moves related to China. So once again, it's a warning to Australia. At the same time, two young journalists who've helped me put this research together, Shubhangi Mishra and Raghav Bikchandani, they've also found an article by Yun Lei, who's chief research fellow at the Research Center for Pacific Island Countries at Liaocheng University in China's Shandong province. And he points out how Australia is making a big mistake, etc., etc., etc. And Australia has no business to be now investing in some of the South China Sea countries or even some of the Pacific countries, because in any case, they can't match China's resources. And as we stand, Australia's total investments in these countries by way of helping them are $1.8 billion. America is $1 billion. China is $42 billion. So when it comes to money bags, China is the big daddy, sugar daddy, whatever you want to call it, depending on what your own strategic picture is. Now, what the Chinese have done to Australia is they have attacked Australia's exports to China. So they've attacked Australian beef, wine, barley, lobsters, timber, copper, and sugar. And who knows, they will now go after other things. Now, if you look at Australia's trade, then last year, China imported $850 million worth of goods from Australia. That is roundly 40% of all of Australia's exports. So China, now being a big economic power also, has this big leverage that if you don't listen to me, you can join your five eyes, 10 eyes, as they say, but I can start punishing you on trade. So they may find that the beef was carrying some disease. They said the timber was carrying some micro insects, invisible insects that might have caused an infestation in China. Lobsters waited so long for their customs and health clearances that the lobsters died meanwhile. So it's easy to kill these products and these businesses. So today, barring heavy metals, which China needs, almost everything is threatened. Now, just as the Chinese account for 40% of Australia's exports, they account for 1 in 13 of all jobs in Australia. That is almost 8% of all jobs in Australia. Now, as we stand between China and Australia, while Australia is really hurting and China is punishing them using trade right now and then threatening them strategically, while that is happening, Australia has said that they are not going to give in to any of their demands on this 14-point charter. In fact, Australians have said that to compromise on any of these 14 is non-negotiable because each one of these is key to Australia's national interest. So they have drawn the line. So this kind of tension battle line is now drawn. And the impact that this kind of diplomacy or this kind of hectoring is having for China is not confined to Australia. So there's an article I'll share with you, which I found very interesting, an article by Michael Schumann in The Atlantic. It's headlined, How Xi Jinping Blew It. And the article essentially says that this world had a Donald Trump-sized statesman hole. The world at any point of time needs a bunch of statesmen, or at least one statesman. That because of the way Donald Trump chose to be, Donald Trump could not have become that. So there was a vacuum in the world, and it was the best opportunity for the leader of the strongest, the most dominant rising power in the world, China, to grow into that slot. But Xi Jinping has blown it for many reasons. And he gives many reasons. And he says, essentially, the political system in China is ill-suited to be a global superpower. Because to be a global superpower, you need to use a lot of soft power. You need a lot of flexibility. You need to be not so insecure, either strategically or internally. But the Chinese political system does not give you that kind of openness. So as a result of this peculiar internal political system in China, their approach to other nations has been to coerce them instead of persuading them, or to threaten and scare and intimidate them instead of reassuring them. And that is what has led to a situation where, as this article mentions, and because it mentioned it, we went back to the original research, and we are sharing some graphics from that Pew research with you, with credit to Pew. If you see this Pew research this year on global attitudes towards China and Xi Jinping, you will then see the price that China has paid for this kind of arrogance and this kind of diplomacy. Now, this Pew research, as you see in these graphics, was carried out in 14 countries, in 14 advanced, developed countries in all continents. This is Italy, Australia, US, Germany, South Korea, Japan, Sweden, Canada, France, UK, the Netherlands, Spain. All these countries are much richer than China. In all these countries, you found over the past year, China's image has fallen greatly. Greatly means in no country today you find China disliked at less than about 75%. So two-thirds of the people in each one of these countries dislike China, and this has gone up by almost, on an average, 20 percentage points. Not by 20%, 20 percentage points over the last year. So that is the price China and Xi Jinping are paying for their arrogance. They don't seem to mind it. Frankly, I'm not surprised that the worst rating in this Pew research for China has come from Australia, which is 81%, down 24% from last year. UK is 75% negative, down 19% from last year. And US is down 13% compared to last year. In fact, it's just as well that Pew did not carry out this research in India right now, because if they did, then I think the result would be about 99% hostile to China, and then word would be out to look for the 1% who are not hostile to China, so they can be told to go to Pakistan. That's a joke, a bad one. Now, is China bothered? Is Xi Jinping bothered? Doesn't seem so. So I will just mention to you one line from the speech he gave at the 70th anniversary of the Korean War. And he said, this line says, "Imperialist invaders brought the flames of war burning to the doorway of the new China. The Chinese people have a deep understanding that in responding to invaders, they should use the language that the invaders understand." So if you hear Xi Jinping's words, if you read his lips, if you understand what he's saying, it's quite evident that they may be getting a lot of bad name all over the world, but the Chinese don't bother. And that's why there will be no shortage of action on this front going ahead. And I suspect there will be many more episodes of Cut the Clutter, thanks to this new Chinese arrogance and aggression in the entire world.